Welcome to The Fiddleleaf Effect, the show where digital marketing meets real-life leadership. I'm your host, Emma Hushka, founder, strategist, and woman on a mission to grow bold businesses and break down barriers. Here, we talk about what's really working in marketing while also digging into the challenges women face in business and life. This is a space to learn, lead, and make room for yourself and for others. Pull up a seat. You belong here.
Welcome to the Beyond the Baby Bonus. I'm Emma Hushka, founder and CEO of Fiddleleaf Marketing. And today I'm joined by Hillary Ogrove Plant, founder of Momentum Birth Coaching, a certified birth coach and doula. We're here to have an honest conversation about what it really takes to support pregnant and postpartum moms. Recently, the Trump administration proposed a $5,000 baby bonus to encourage more women to have children. But for anyone who's been through pregnancy or the postpartum period, it's clear supporting moms takes more than a one-time check. This episode is about what mothers actually need: physical, emotional, financial, societal support. We'll talk about what's missing from the current system, the real challenges women face, and how individuals, communities, and businesses can step up to help. So first of all, welcome, Hillary. It is awesome to have you here. I know when we first met, actually through my sister-in-law years ago, I was so inspired about everything that you were doing at the time. And then when you started Momentum Birth Coaching, it was so cool to connect with you. And, you know, I think we immediately related on this and just the gap in issues that in support for women, and especially during, you know, pregnancy and postpartum. So I think I said to you when we first started talking, like, we're gonna have a conversation, we're gonna record it and get this in front of people. So, you know, I appreciate you taking some time to talk with me, and you know, I wanted to start at least to say, you know, we don't want to have this conversation about politics. It's not about politics. It's about, you know, providing providing a voice in a spotlight on these issues. And I know that's something that you're really passionate about. But like we mentioned, you know, we've talked about, there's this proposed $5,000 baby bonus. And, you know, Hillary, to start us off, what do you think, you know, why is this one-time bonus, what is this missing in the reality of motherhood with both your experience as a mother of two and a birth coach and a doula? You know, where do you think the biggest gaps in this proposal are when it comes to support for women in pregnancy?
Yeah, I think, first of all, thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be here and talk about how we can support moms in a better way. So thank you. And I think that this $5,000 proposal incentive is, I mean, who doesn't love the idea of being incentivized by money? But at the same time, it's just really falling short of what mothers actually need. It's not addressing any of the emotional help that moms need, any of the help with a newborn that moms need. Raising kids is not easy. Just, you know, we need a lot more help than just $5,000. Mm-hmm. And $5,000 is nowhere near what it costs to raise a kid. Mm-hmm. So what I fear about this is that people would be incentivized by $5,000 and then realize that having a kid is actually incredibly expensive, and now they're in bigger trouble because they can't actually afford to have a kid, and the $5,000 doesn't even come close to covering it. So that's what I worry, is that people who actually are looking for the $5,000 would be kind of set up for failure in the system.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's not even something I considered of, you know, kind of the, what is the proposal and the purpose of this is to encourage mothers to want to have kids. But I didn't even, you know, think about the fact that maybe this would convince someone that this is something that they should do. And then just like you said, that is just a drop in the bucket. Again, mm-hmm. for any moms listening, it is not just moms, you know, any family that is raising kids, that there's so much that goes into that. And of course, you listed off, you know, a lot of the emotional and physical gaps in support. So let's talk a little bit more about that, you know, specifically to the emotional and physical and mental health support. I'd love to talk about both, you know, prenatal and, you know, I know that's a big focus of yours as a birth coach, is, you know, helping. This is such a new thing for, especially for the first time, but even mm-hmm. after the first time, you know, it's still such a huge change for a woman. So let's talk about, you know, from, again, your experience, what do you feel? And let's talk prenatal then postpartum, because I do think it's from my experience, there's a huge need in both, but it can be different, equally as important. But, you know, let's say from a prenatal perspective, you know, what emotional, physical, and mental health support do you think that women actually need? And where, you know, where have you seen in your experience with working with your birth coach clients, like where is that support, you know, really actually, where's that need and that gap?
I think that prenatally for first time moms, it's often like there's so much information out there. There is every opinion on the internet, your friends, your family, everyone has a different opinion telling you to do different things, what you should eat, what you should, how you should exercise, like what things you need to put on your registry, all these things. And it's super overwhelming, especially if you've never done it before. So I think that people, this is why I got into what I'm doing, is that I want to help people be able to think through what's going to work best for them without having to kind of navigate everything that's online or coming at them from other sources in one way or another. Because those things are so conflicting and they often miss the point of like, okay, what's going to actually work for you and your family and your job or your lifestyle or whatever. And so helping people figure out how that works best for them.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I do think it's so easy, again, from both my experience with, you know, pregnancy with my first, but even things that you've shared. And if you don't follow Hillary on social media, we'll make sure her her accounts are tagged for this podcast. But, you know, I know you've shared something that talked about how people get, you know, kind of caught up in like the fun part of being pregnant, of like the registry and, you know, the decorating the nursery, which is so fun and, you know, such an exciting time. But I think, like you said, it's so, there's so much just in, like information and ideas and opinions thrown at you during that time when, you know, I know there's science that shows like your brain chemistry is actually changing to prepare you to give birth and become a mother, that on top of that and your body changing and the hormones, and then to have all this, you know, kind of external thoughts and things thrown at you. I love that you just really kind of focus on, you know, what truly matters in helping each individual kind of figure that out, what works for them. What do you think from a physical perspective? And, you know, I'm going to talk a little bit about my experience. You know, I'm now a certified Bar 3 instructor, and physically of, you know, the, just how many moms, and again, and I'm sure you can speak to this too, how much and how quickly your body changes in pregnancy. And I don't know about you, but I had no idea what to expect. I was mostly terrified of this idea of growing a human, keeping this baby safe with so many things out of my control. Also new, I used to dread going to the doctor. It scared just in general, like I had this white coat syndrome, I think is what they call it. Just in general, did not like going to the doctor. With pregnancy, you're going, you know, once a month, sometimes more often, or, you know, towards the end, more often than that. So all that to say, you know, with my experience with Bar 3, I, you know, this is just one example, but they have such great programs for, you know, prenatal support to continue to be active and move throughout your pregnancy. And as your body is changing, and awesome prenatal, you know, modifications and ways to continue moving. And for me, that was so huge for my mental health, because my physical and moving my body, I know how much it impacts my mental health. But is there anything you've seen from a birth coaching perspective from, you know, the physical changes that are happening, which, you know, are obviously some of the more visual ones for, you know, other people, but can be, you know, I think cause, you know, again, so much of an impact on the mental health side, because it's such a huge change that so many women obviously have not been through. So, you know, any thoughts on what support or what, you know, you've seen in your experience as a birth coach when it comes to like physical changes for a woman in their journey?
Yeah, I think that something that could help a lot for me personally, at least when I was pregnant, is I wanted to be involved in things like, you know, prenatal yoga or a bar or whatever makes sense, but it's expensive and I couldn't afford to spend hundreds of dollars. I don't know exactly how much it is, but
absolutely,
like it's a lot to get the physical, the proper physical activity in. And so obviously I was doing it on my own, but then like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not a personal trainer or, you know, certified in any like prenatal activity. So that is hard to then also be guessing. And then you go back to the rabbit hole of, okay, what does the internet say? And, you know, some people say don't exercise and some people say exercise every day. And it's just, there's so many questions around all of it that then that also impacts your mental health because you don't know if you're doing it right. You don't know, you see your body changing and you don't know if it's something, you know, that's supposed to happen, not supposed to happen. It's just all very confusing. So I feel like these are just things we also need to be talking about more. Maybe doctors bringing it up more, just having more open conversations about what's normal, what to expect, how this is like how your body's made, and this is how it, what's supposed to happen. And I think that would make people feel a lot better about it as they're going through.
Absolutely. And it already is, you know, like we said, so new and scary just in general, but then the fear of doing something physically exercise related that causes harm to you or your baby. And you just, like you said, I think that, and this will probably be a common theme because I know it's something we've talked about with the lack of education. Right. Just in general for women and their body, I think even from a young age, but they're about their bodies, just like you said, what's normal, what's not, what is, how can you take care of yourself physically to also take care of yourself mentally? And, especially during this extremely vulnerable time and just like you said, whether or not that's, you know, with their physician at doctor's appointments, or, you know, maybe even, just community based opportunities to move your body, you know, that are affordable because you brought up such a good point, you know, which again, start of this conversation, this $5,000 baby bonus that, you know, talk about not even we're talking about, you know, taking care of a baby, let alone taking care of mom, which is really what we want to talk about here. And again, that $5,000,
won't pay for your yoga.
Right. Exactly. Let, you know, which is, you know, some people would look at as, you know, not needed, but like we just talked about, it's so important, to, you know, strengthening and preparing a woman's body for birthing a child, which is one of the most natural things that happens, but also again, just a huge, physical, it's, you know, one of the biggest physical things, someone could go through. So
you, can I interrupt? Sorry.
Yeah,
you
please.
Brought up a good point too. I feel like so often people or women don't know about their bodies until they're pregnant. And I feel like that's doing them a huge disservice. And so these things can start so much earlier, just helping even like young girls as they grow up understand how their body works and all of that, that is going to significantly help people once they're pregnant. They're going to understand a lot more than just, okay, I'm pregnant now. I don't know like what to do.
What do I do?
And because that also sets us up for failure because then you're trying to, you know, learn so much more. Yeah. As you go. And that's just a lot. Yeah. It's very overwhelming.
And it's already so, and I come back to the hormones because with my experience too, especially during the first trimester, you're just like, it's, you know, I remember reading about it because I love learning and I sought out, even though this information was being fed to me, I was just like, I need to learn it. That's how I kind of handle the fear is I just inform myself. And I remember learning about, you know, all the chemical, literally the, especially during the first trimester when it's, you know, really, everything's preparing and growing and just everything's changing so quickly. So add to that, these changes in your, you know, physical chemistry of your body, physical changes, and then this lack of knowledge and understanding. And, you know, what you just said about, you know, the not knowing their body or understanding is also, can you imagine how hard it is then to trust yourself in your body when you don't even understand what's happening? I mean, it's such a scary place to be. And we're like, yeah, just go have a baby and, you know,
mother's
good luck.
Instinct.
Yeah, it'll just kick in. You'll figure it out. And and there's just so much more that can be done, just like you said, from such an early age to just better support girls and women in general, but especially as they navigate, you know, what again is supposed to be adding, you know, more life to this world. So let's talk specifically about what some of those, you know, there's definitely community-based care doula, you know, and birth coach, obviously is in your background. And I want to get to postpartum too. I think we probably could do two podcasts, one about pregnancy, one about postpartum, but let's talk a little bit about, just to kind of wrap up the pregnancy side, you know, specifically what birth coaches and doulas, you know, what they're there to do and what to support. Mm-hmm. I think people are more, at least with my experience, more familiar with a doula than maybe a birth coach. Mm-hmm. So I'd love, you know, for you to walk us through, you know, what a birth coach is, what a doula is, and where you can really help with, you know, the pregnancy journey for expecting moms.
Yeah. So a doula is helping during birth. There's birth doulas and there's postpartum doulas, but I'm speaking about birth doulas right now. They help during birth with physical, emotional, and informational support. So they're there throughout the labor and delivery process, helping the partner, helping the person giving birth, just there as a part of their team to help them navigate whatever comes up and provide comfort measures and that kind of thing. I do that, but I also am really passionate about prenatal coaching because I think that, like, you brought up that you were researching a ton, and that's like one, oh, can you see me?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Sorry. Researching a ton is one extreme. I was the other extreme where I was so nervous. I didn't want to know anything. And so my goal is to really help people kind of find the middle of that, the sweet spot of like researching enough to feel comfortable and working through what they want enough to feel comfortable without feeling inundated and overwhelmed by everything that's out there. Mm-hmm. So most doulas will do a prenatal visit or two with their clients. I really like or encourage people to do more like five, where we go through like, what do you want for your birth? How can we help you get there? Obviously, we can't predict the outcome of a birth, but we can help you figure out how to navigate changes that come up. So help you advocate for yourself in labor and just in your doctor's appointments ahead of time and that kind of thing. So yeah, it's really, the prenatal coaching goes from like super practical mm-hmm. help, like how to set up your house to have a newborn in it, to more of like abstract ideas, like what's birth going to look like and mm-hmm. how can we help your mindset and all of that going into it.
Yeah. Thank you for that breakdown because, mm-hmm. you know, again, the more that I've talked with you, the more I've learned about this incredible role of a birth coach that, you know, again, is addressing some of these things that we just talked about mm-hmm. and that gap in support for pregnancy and just having that expert and that person to go to and that kind of, in marketing, I like to call it like that source of truth, but that, mm-hmm. you know, kind of grounding place with all of these, you know, external things we talked about that you can have someone to talk through that. So thank you for talking through that. Let's get to postpartum because, you know, again, this is a whole thing and I have a few topics I want to talk about here. But, you know, I will never forget like those first few days with both of my daughters, but especially the first of you have this, and actually one of my cousins posted, I think on Facebook like yesterday or 2 days ago. And I was going to ask you if you'd heard of this. I think it was called like second day syndrome or something, but it was basically, you know, that first day you have your baby and you know, it's kind of this, all this hard work, this thing that was growing inside of you is there and all those emotions and, you know, starting hopefully for your body to heal. But she posted something about, you know, people don't warn you enough about like the second night where it's mm-hmm. like, you know, usually the doctors and nurses have maybe not checked in as much, you know, typically you're still in the hospital, especially with your first, depending on, you know, your delivery and baby is realizing I'm not in my cozy home anymore, mm-hmm. is probably crying and screaming more. You have no idea likely what you're doing. Maybe trying to nurse, maybe not. And probably have not slept at all,
yeah.
if any, you know, very few hours. So let's talk about postpartum. I want to talk about, again, there's a lot here, but let's talk about kind of those very early days. You know, a couple of things that I know and have dealt with and have seen and no friends have dealt with is kind of that isolation and the unrealistic expectations that come. But let's talk about those challenges of those first few days and weeks. Just where do you see are those gaps? And again, where do you know where can birth coaches and doulas help support this? And I'd love to get into like what can partners or family members or friends of anyone going through postpartum do to help that new mom? Because again, I think people want to help. And I think you've seen this in your work. Like some people want to help so bad, but just maybe you're doing it in the opposite ways and making it worse. So again, let's talk first few days, first few weeks, you know, what are women going through in how can, you know, again, roles like yours support and then also the community.
Yeah.
That's a big, I know it's a big
question. It's a loaded question, but, let's see. I feel like, I mean, I'm sure every first time mom feels like this. Everyone's so excited for you. Like during pregnancy, you're so, you know, they're seeing how you're feeling, all these things. Then you have the baby and the nurses send you home and you're like, you're just sending me home by myself. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. And then people will check up on you, hopefully, but it's less of like, how are you feeling? And it's more of like, how's the baby doing? Then all of a sudden you go from kind of back to the body image thing. You go from like people were admiring your pregnant body and now they're like, I mean, I don't know what people are actually thinking, but as the pregnant person or the person who, the newly postpartum person, you're like, you feel completely deflated. You don't know what's going on with your body. And it's like, it's a humbling experience that people don't walk you through ahead of time. And so I think that there are lots of practical ways we can help new moms. I think checking in on new moms, but not expecting a response is a great thing to do. I think that a lot of times people will like text or call or whatever, and you feel like you're obligated to give them a full update. And that's really overwhelming as a new mom, because you're just, you maybe had 5 minutes to think for yourself and now you're spending that time updating other people. But just knowing that people are thinking about you is, and still have you in mind, is really nice. I will never forget when someone just said, I'm at Starbucks, what can I get you? And then they just dropped it at the door. Like it wasn't
no expectation. Like
anything complicated. Yeah, there wasn't an expectation. It was just simply like, here's a coffee delivery. They didn't want to come in.
I know you could use caffeine.
Yeah, they didn't want to like talk, which if you're up for talking, great. Like invite someone in if you want. But the expectation that someone is going to invite you in is really stressful on the new mom. So because like, not that my house is ever clean, but it definitely wasn't clean when I had a new baby. So also things like, oh gosh, like saying, I'm at the grocery store, what can I get you? Being really specific with your offers instead of like, let me know if you need help. Mm-hmm. Because new moms don't even know what help they need. So what I like to do in that prenatal coaching time is help people think through what are things people can do for you. And this is like really uncomfortable for a lot of people because they don't like asking people for help. And even if someone offers to help, they feel uncomfortable saying they need it. And so I like to say, like, make a grocery list of basics that you always get at the store. If someone texts you saying they're at the store, copy and paste that list and send it to them. Like, make this easier for you ahead of time before you're in the moment so that you can feel more taken care of and supported and stable during those raw moments postpartum.
Those are such great ideas. And I'm thinking, my God, I really could have used you a few years ago. But you just hit on so many, such important areas that, and especially to be able to think through during pregnancy when yes, your brain is changing, but it is, you're hopefully still getting close to normal amount of sleep and you can process thoughts logically. Because just like you said, so many people, and I am absolutely one of those that is, I'm hate asking for help, don't want to put someone else out. And I love the idea of guiding people to ask specific questions, because it is a lot easier to accept when it's, you know, I'm already at the store, I am already at Starbucks, and it's like, oh, I'm not putting you out if you like grab one extra, you know, it's a little easier. And for that new mom to think through what those things are, because just like you said, especially in those early days, I think, bless my husband, was so good at just like capturing moments, because he knows I'm big on pictures. Like, I never want to forget even some of the like chaos and the ugly moments in some of those pictures that I remember in the moment. I was like, are you kidding me? You're taking right now. But like, now I see is like, I'm in like a nursing bra, like, you know, the nursing pillows, like covered in milk, and my hair probably hasn't been washed in who knows how long. Like, I am just a mess. And he, you know, wasn't trying to mortify me, you know, was just snapping pictures, probably because, you know, our baby looked cute. But just like, I never thought, like, I am pretty type, I'm very type A, like, you know, just never thought that that would be the life that I was living. But I maybe, you know, slept an hour. Maybe. But in those moments, if someone asked me what I needed, my brain can't compute, like you said, the amount of work it would take to even think of what I needed, or to even feel good about asking someone for help in that moment. Like you said, I don't want to see anyone. I don't want to talk to anyone. I am covered in milk, and I probably haven't showered, maybe eaten that day. So I love those ideas of like prepping ahead of time, because in those early days and weeks, there's so much happening, and it is, I think it's been some of the hardest times in my life, because, you know, kind of back to the expectation, everyone's like, enjoy it, savor it. And it's like, it is very special, but it's also so, so hard for some people, and that's okay. That's normal. And I think that's when I was so excited about this conversation, because when you're feeling it, it can feel really lonely and isolating. And you're like, what is wrong with me? Why do I feel this way? The baby blues are talked about, you know, those first few weeks, the hormones come crashing down. And, you know, there is this kind of natural sadness that a lot of women feel. But postpartum depression is so common and so real. And I know that some of those things will happen regardless of preparation, but at least will help women navigate and not be afraid to ask for help, and in having people around them that are offering support and help in the right way to help them through this. So again, I think it's just so great that you're helping women prepare as much proactively before they get to that stage. So let's talk a little bit more about postpartum support in you know, from a both physical and mental kind of healing process, because, and again, I think we've talked about it, you know, in the more, again, research I've done, just because it's so interesting to me, you know, I think postpartum's looked at as like, you know, 3 months, 6 months. There's studies that show it's years. You know, again, from a birth coach doula perspective, like, what have you seen in again, the lack of support? You know, we were talking early days, like what people can do, but I mean, women are changed, you know, forever when they become moms. But, you know, I think it is, at least in my experience, you know, a year before I'm any semblance of myself. And even then, you know, there's still impacts that I want to get into, like where the system feels when it comes to like getting back to work and other things that I'm very passionate about. But, you know, let's talk even longer term, you know, those expectations for moms when you're starting to, you know, maybe feel at least a little more physically healed. But, you know, what is kind of that longer postpartum period look like? And again, where can maybe either, you know, a role like yours and or the community like help support women during that, you know, first 6 to 12 months after having baby?
I think that since having babies, I have realized postpartum's forever. I don't think you're, not to say you're never the same again. Like, I don't think that's a negative. I just think that there's things that are going to be different, and it's, there's no defined amount of time. I also think like the longer you take to address some of these issues, like for me, it was like pelvic floor physical therapy. I went back to work 6 months. I was lucky to be able to take 6 months after my son was born. But after that, I couldn't go to physical therapy because it was during the workday. And if I went, eventually I finally prioritized it. But then I had to take a sick day every time. And so the longer I put off things like that because I wasn't able to access them for whatever reason, your postpartum's gonna be even longer because like those things need to be worked on and healed and all of that. And if you aren't able to access that those resources, then I mean, there's people like in their 50s and 60s who probably are still seeing, I don't want to say damage, but like they're still seeing things that could have
Impacts, yeah.
been, yeah, impacts that could have been helped right after they had a baby. So that's just my two cents on that. And I think that it's important to not forget about the new moms. Like, I think that right when they have a baby, you're excited about their baby. And then once they have a 6-month-old, like, you're not even talking, not talking to them, but you're not talking to them about like how they're doing and everything. So checking in when other people might not be checking in is really important because it's still hard. I mean, I have a 1.5-year-old and a 3.5-year-old, and I still want people to ask me how I'm feeling because I'm tired. But people don't think to ask. I mean, they ask me like surface level, how are you doing? But it's like, it's hard work. And so knowing that someone's thinking about you is really important. And also, I think even if you, when you have kids, I think the division amongst your friends is really obvious. And the support that they'll give you is kind of comes to light. And so even if you don't have kids, just being there to listen to the person, even if you don't care about talking about kids, whatever, you're there to support the mom, not to like be interested in her kids. So I totally get it if you're like, if kids aren't your thing, but the mom still needs support and needs someone to listen to them and needs someone to, this is not totally postpartum related, but like invite her to dinner still and, you know, help her get that social interaction she needs because I've had people just not ask me because they assume I can't go because I have kids. And I'm like, I desperately need to get out of the house and talk to someone, you know? So you still want to be you and your opportunities to do that go down because people assume you don't have time. And so
Absolutely.
that's something that's like, if you're not into babies, you don't have to go hold their baby, but just say, do you want to come to dinner with me? Or do you want to go for a walk? Or do you want to anything like that to help them kind of feel normal?
Yeah, no, I love that. I'm so glad you brought that up because I do, you brought up so many good points. But I think that last one of the mom is still a person and still a friend and still a woman. And this is something that I tried to navigate when I became a mom, and something that I delayed having kids for a while because I was terrified of I've loved my career. I've wanted to be successful in my career, and I was worried, like, how would I do that with kids? And how will, after I have kids, continue to chase my career goals and dreams and make the impacts on the world that I want to? And then once I had kids, it's like, how can I still be Emma? And that's been something I kept top of mind, and I've been able to navigate sometimes easier than other times and figuring that out. But for other people to help and not be afraid to, like, still see that person as a friend, like you said, whether or not they have kids or not. And I don't know about you, but I have my best friends from college, the best group of friends that all of them had kids before me. And I don't know if you've seen those, like, posts on Instagram, but it's like, you send this to the person that you're just like, I'm sorry, I didn't know what you were going through, you know? And I've said this to them, like, I wish I could have been such a better friend to, my mom friends that came before me, knowing, what they were going through. But, I promised to pass it on, and hence I'm doing things like this because, it is so hard if you haven't experienced it to truly understand how to support. But I love the things that you brought up of, just still ask, check in on your friend. And even if you can't relate to what they're going through, do check in on them because, just like you said, the postpartum period, I love that you said it doesn't end because you are changed. You're still a person. You're still in some ways the same person, but you are forever changed. And I think every mom can relate to that. And it's just such a wild thing to navigate of mom, but also who am I am without that. Mm-hmm. Not without, but in addition to that identity. And yeah, it's such a cool topic, but it's heavy, you know.
Last small thing on that. I think that some people without kids or maybe with older kids or whatever often can get frustrated when new moms, all they do is talk about their kids. Mm-hmm. And I totally understand that. And I also think it would be really helpful. I don't necessarily have a good example of this, but like, ask me something else. Like, because I don't want to just talk about my kids. My brain does not, I cannot think of anything else right now. And like,
that's what I got.
That's my life right now. So please ask me something else so I can talk about something else. And I'm happy to have different conversations. I just don't know how to come up with them right now. So
absolutely,
just like, you know, having, like we said, like a friend just to talk like you used to talk to your friends instead of constantly talking about my spit up on my clothes. You know, it's just like something new is really refreshing to a new mom, but it's hard for them to get there themselves.
Yeah, no, I think that's such, I love that. Like just the advice of like moms. Yeah. A lot of us do love to talk about our kids. They're so much of our life, mm-hmm. but at the same time, like you said, there's so much more to us, but sometimes it's really hard to think just like your brain is in, you know, they talk about like the mental load of motherhood, which again, mm-hmm. I want to get into like more of just like that. But it is so much constantly as a mom having to be in the back of your mind of what is needed and what's happening mm-hmm. as a mom that to like, I don't even want to say turn it off because even if you're talking about something else, you still know exactly what's needed, you know, for your kids. But to, you know, we can talk about something else, but like, you know, meet me halfway.
Roll me a bone,
It's just not top of mind. No, I think that's such a good point. I wanted to talk about just briefly, because I think I brought this up to you before, but an experience I had with my second that I had actually never heard of, but while I was pregnant with my second, my daughters are 20 months apart. So kind of a, you know, still a baby going into mm-hmm. toddler while I was pregnant. And I struggled emotionally. And like with my first, like I felt pretty good physically, emotionally the entire time. Postpartum, you know, pretty good. But with my second, I was like, oh, what is happening? I was sad most of the time. And I had never felt like that in my life. And I remember we went on a vacation to outside of Vegas. So like nice weather, I was pregnant. It was kind of during the spring. And I was like, I just, you know, it's a seasonal, you know, affective disorder. Uh-huh. And I just need to go sit in somewhere nice. And we're in the sun. And I remember one of the nights we were there in, again, beautiful location, again, with my 20, you know, whatever, almost 2-year-old. And I remember still feeling really sad. And I realized like, I thought the sun was just going to fix it. I was like, I feel depressed. And I started doing, again, I've made it clear, trying to seek information. I did research on like, what is like prenatal mm-hmm. depression. Mm-hmm. And I'd never heard of that. And I found it was very difficult to find information about this, but I did find that prenatal depression is actually pretty common with second, third additional pregnancies, because like the lack of sleep we talked about, the amount of rest your body needs during pregnancy mm-hmm. with your first is difficult, but usually more obtainable. You know, you're working, but hopefully can nap and rest more when you have a toddler or multiple children to take care of. Mm-hmm. And yes, even if you have a spouse that is helping, it's still mental load, like we talked about, and physically that a lot of women go through, you know, this difficult time during pregnancy with second mm-hmm. or additional pregnancies that is just not talked about. And I remember digging for information. I found like one person on Instagram that was talking about it. And I remember just crying at like 2 a.m. because it was like, oh my gosh, like I just felt so seen and heard, because I was, mm-hmm. I was like, what is wrong with me? Why do I feel this way? And something else that I remember reading is like this fear of not loving, you know, how could you mm-hmm. ever love another child this much? You know, it's such a different, I've been through pregnancy before, but for me, the second was just a different ballgame. Mm-hmm. because of all these factors that I was so underprepared for. So I wanted to bring that up in this conversation because, like I said, it was so hard for me to find anyone talking about this. And it felt really lonely. And when I started Fiddleleaf, I wanted part of this to be shared so that anyone that's going through this doesn't feel alone. So did you have any experience with this with your second? I know you have two as well and really close in age. And if not, you know, what experience, if any, do you have with maybe second pregnancies, you know, with that second? What can people do to help with that? Because again, they think like, oh, it's their second, you're having a sibling, you've done this before, you probably don't need a whole lot, you know, and again, kind of that, you know, it is different, I guess, in my experience. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm so glad you brought this up. And I think there's so many different angles to go with it. It's also Maternal Mental Health Month. So I love that we're having this conversation now. And I think that every pregnancy, every birth, every newborn is completely different. And oftentimes, at least I felt this way, and it sounds like you did too, people are like, oh, they've done this before, they know what they're doing, they can handle it. And there are some things you might not worry as much about. I don't know, I like didn't care about sanitizing the bottles as much or whatever, you know, like the little things. But there are some totally new things that you've never navigated before. And it often feels like, obviously people care about you, but in your raw postpartum or pregnant hormonal mindset, like, why doesn't anyone care? You know, often there aren't baby showers for people who are having second kids. It's kind of just like, well, you've done this, good luck. And I think that you're totally right. Prenatal depression is something that's never talked about. I didn't know about it until I started learning about everything birth related. And I also think that without being able to have something to compare to, it's really hard to detect these things. So in my example, I had, after my first son, for a year, I was like, I was sad and I didn't know what was going on. And I didn't even know to identify it as depression in myself. And I was just like every night putting him to bed, crying, wondering if something bad's going to happen to him. Am I going to be the one to do something bad to him? Like things that in deep down, I knew I would never do that, but like, it's scary. And you, it's this realization of responsibility. Like I'm in charge of this baby and I am the only thing keeping him alive. And that's like, that's really hard. And so many people told me like, that's just how moms feel. Like we worry about our kids. You're okay. I'm sure you're fine. And no one, like I have a great support system, but no one flagged that as abnormal. And I asked myself every day, like, is this really how people feel? Like, this feels horrible. I would see like my baby laughing and I'd be like, oh, that's so cute. And then all of a sudden I'd be like, oh, but what if, like, what if
this terrible thought?
What if a bookcase felt like horrible things? It's terrible. This is not how I can live my life. And so when he was a year, I finally, like, thankfully, I had a panic attack and I said, like, I can't do this. It scared me. And I finally got the help that I needed. But then with my second, I could see clearly the difference between like, wow, that was not okay. And like, I wish I knew what was going on back then. But until I had something to compare it to, which with my second, I didn't have depression or I was already preparing for it. I was already on medication. I knew how to deal with it the second time. I could look back and be like, wow, raising these two babies is a completely different experience because I got the support I needed with one and I didn't with the other. And that's to no one's fault. It wasn't like no one was supporting me. It just, no one knew what to do or what was normal or how to talk about it.
Absolutely.
And I, I don't even know if this is answering your question,
No,
but
it absolutely
one,
did.
okay, one more thing that I think is important is like those conversations when you go to your 6 week appointment or your pediatrician appointment with your baby, you are constantly getting those. I don't know, for me, I got those checklists like fill this out in the waiting room. Are you feeling sad? Are you feeling tired? Which I'm like, for real? Of course, I'm feeling
Why is that
tired.
question on there?
Yeah. But I still lied about it. And I knew if I tell them I'm feeling tired, they're going to flag me as crazy and like, what's gonna happen? Am I gonna be taken away or is my baby gonna be taken away? All these things. So every time I went in there, I literally said to my husband one time, I'm like, here I go to lie on my screener again. Like, I would just make that up because like I didn't want to be,
You didn't know what it
I
meant
didn't
if
know
you
what it
didn't.
meant. Yeah. And so having people like we need to support moms and be like, this is okay. I mean, not normal. We don't want to accept this as okay, but let's have a conversation and get you help because your baby's not going to be taken from you just because you're feeling depressed. Like,
Absolutely.
but as someone who's never gone through that, I didn't know.
It's so scary.
And it's scary. And I didn't want to be labeled as like crazy or, you know, all these things in my head. I'm like, they're gonna think I'm wild if I'm worried about hurting my baby, you know, of
Absolutely,
course.
100%.
And so I think if that was just a conversation and that was like someone checking up on you multiple times, not just your 6 week appointment and then saying, okay, you're good to go, and asking you how you're doing, asking you not like, are you feeling hopeless or, you know, those classic questions, but like, have a conversation with me so you can detect if I'm feeling hopeless and I'm feeling like a failure. Because I'd tell myself all the time, like, I'm a failure of a mom. Like, does he even know I love him? And like, then I'd go in and check that box. No, I don't feel like failure. And it's like, that's not helpful. So
Absolutely.
I just feel like this is something we need to talk about more and something that, like, it's common. Postpartum depression and postpartum anxiety is common, and we've normalized it. And I think that's the problem because it's like some level of worry makes sense as a parent because you love your kids and, you know, you're taking care of them. But if it's debilitating in any way, like that's not, you don't have to accept that as your life.
Absolutely.
And I just, after now getting the help that I need, I can look back and be like, wow, I wish I did that earlier because you deserve to enjoy spending time with your baby.
But now you have this business that you get to help
Yeah.
and voice this. And thank you for sharing that.
Totally.
And I'm so sorry you went through that. And I'm so glad you took the conversation to that, especially from a, specifically like physician's care after having a baby, because I was mind blown that mom gets one most of the time, again, depending on your delivery type, but I believe even with C-section, it's mostly about your healing and your physical body rather than your mental. I don't think they're, catering more mental health towards,
No.
C-section just because maybe there's more actual visits needed from a medical perspective. The fact that there's one, and just like you said, I did the same thing. Those boxes, it was like, or it's also, and this is what I've brought up to other people, that day, maybe I drink a little extra caffeine. Maybe I had a little, a little positivity in me that maybe I felt better that hour, that minute. That I believe I had one, maybe two of those
Totally.
asked
But
of
2 a.m.
me.
I wouldn't have answered that
Oh
way.
yeah, or
So,
tomorrow or that afternoon. And the fact that how many times did they see baby in the first 6 months? I mean, so many appointments. And it's neat, I'm not saying that shouldn't happen, but the mother. Absolutely. And I do know, I don't remember with if it was my first or second, I don't think it was both, but I did get a phone call from our hospital a few days after to check in, which was really cool to just ask, and I remember saying that and it might have been because I used to deal with pretty debilitating anxiety years ago. And I mentioned that in my prenatal appointments that I was terrified of postpartum and kind of like you said, kind of preparing for this postpartum depression that I ended up not having with my first, had with my second, which was, you know, I think that much more harder for me because I was like, oh, I don't, you know, I didn't have to worry about that. And then I did. But I remember mentioning that. And I do think they checked in maybe, you know, one more time. But just like you said, the amount of times that I just, like I didn't even think about, because I didn't even consider checking yes of have I had thoughts of these things, because absolutely not, but I absolutely did. And I will never forget, and I'm going to try not to get emotional talking about it because it was such a hard moment for me, but with my second, both of my daughters, we did sleep training, very well, but our second took longer to take, you know, to kind of catch on to this whole eat during the day, sleep at night idea. And of course we're like, what are we doing wrong and all the things. But I remember there was a moment, that in the, you know, whatever wee hours of the night, a couple weeks old or month, even longer, I don't know. And I dealt with postpartum rage with my second, and I've never felt rage in my life. Like, I don't even know if I would have been able to describe that word or use that word before I felt this. I was mad. And I definitely had some sad moments with my first, but I was very angry with my second. And I think that lack of sleep, again, with now two, was a different ballgame. Instead of being able to nap and maybe rest more, you know, it's just, my husband was doing everything he could, but with two, a toddler, you know, and a newborn, it's just, it's a different ballgame. And I remember one time in the middle of the night, I just couldn't get her to go to sleep, fed her, all these things. And I had this moment and I like was, I think I was so upset and I, you know, had my husband hold the baby and I was like punching the bed. And I've never physically felt, you know, rage that it's like, I need to hit something. Like, that's not who I am. No. And I remember breaking down crying in our bedroom and I don't want to get upset. It was the scariest moment because I was like, this is not who I am. This is terrifying. And I remember thinking, and I think I've shared this with you before, that extra moment I have of like, this is not okay. This is not me. And I, you know, broke down crying rather than, but I remember thinking, this is how moms snap, is there is something I'm able to bring myself somehow control this and breathe, whatever the hell I did to get through that. But I remember thinking like, I somehow understand how moms make really, really bad decisions in those moments. And to be able to even understand how it could get there is still something I'm, it's really hard to admit that I felt. And I know there's a lot of women that have not admitted that and would be terrified to admit that. I love my kids more than anything in the world, but that feeling in the lack of sleep is so, like you said, so debilitating. And it is, again, it needs to be talked about because it's so real and so many women go through this. And just like you said, don't have to deal with this. They can, there is help. It's not as actively being offered as it needs to be. And, you know, you and I at least going to continue the fight. And there's so many awesome organizations that are working to make this more of a conversation. But, you know, we started this with like this baby bonus, $5,000. Yeah, sure. Sounds like a lot of money. You know what I would prefer? Support during some of those scariest times that you physically, mentally are being so exhausted and you aren't your shell of yourself and it is so scary. And like, that's, put the money there. Like, that's what these administrations need to do, put the money into to the support that women need and deserve to be able to get through those moments. So that guy. These are so important and such big conversations. And I hope, you know, anyone listening to this that's felt this, like, just like you said, like, check those boxes. They're not going to take your kid. They're going to get you the help you need. And, you know, any healthcare organizations that maybe happen to listen to this, like, whatever changes or community support we can do to get more support for moms in those moments, you know, I think it's just so critical.
And even individuals, if you hear a mom saying anything that is just like, it might not even be a red flag, but you're just like,
even a yellow.
I don't know if that's right. And like, there's no harm in reaching out to your doctor and just getting, asking them. And I think what you mentioned about saying, ahead of time that you have struggled with anxiety in the past. It doesn't have to be a diagnosis. You don't have to have been diagnosed with depression. Tell your provider that, and hopefully they will check in on you a little bit more, and kind of just bring it more to the front of your mind, because that's important.
Maybe you're more prone to it, and you have dealt with that. And I think, just like you said, those, any comment or anything that someone, you know, talking to a new mom or a pregnant person that makes you don't let that slip by. Don't be like, oh, did they sound like they might be struggling? Ask follow-up questions, because it could be that opportunity that someone finally feels that they can feel safe to admit those things with someone that they trust, and then realize, just like you said, because you don't have that comparison, you don't know what you're going through. You just know it's not you or that, like, this is just what it is. But then if that person just even probes on that, and maybe, you know, it's not, maybe they're fine and it just, you took it, you know, differently, but at least, you know, give them that opportunity. And just like you said, I think, that's maybe just opens them up, and at least to talk to their doctor or you know, see what they can do to get that support.
Yes.
I really want to talk about where the system fails when it comes to, and this is one of the, especially as a business owner, one of the things I'm really, really passionate about is the gaps in paid leave and affordable childcare. Maternal health care, you know, we could continue on that, but I think we've talked a lot about that. But let's talk about, you know, a lot of moms go back to work or need to go back to work. And I think it's incredible. And I have so many stay-at-home moms, and I tell them all the time that I don't know how you do it, because I couldn't do it. And I think we've talked about this before. I'm a better mom because I work. I love what I do. I did go back to work with both of my kids before I started my business. And it's a huge reason why I started my business, is to have the flexibility to be a mom. But, you know, luckily, I live in Oregon. I actually don't know what California, if they've done anything yet, but Oregon, you know, I think about 2 years ago, had or passed the Oregon Paid Leave Act, which allows specifically with at least parenting, either partner to take, you know, a set amount of time with a percentage of their pay, you know, that employers and employees are paying in for paid leave, which is fantastic. And there's, I know, a couple other states that have done this. I'm a huge advocate that this needs to happen on a national level, because not every state, you know, some states, the things I've heard of how quickly women are going back to work after having a baby, after all these things we just talked about that women are going through, you know, we're talking 6 to 12 months, you know, some women go back to work after weeks. And I'm sure even days. So the gaps in paid leave, we'll get to childcare next, but let's talk about paid leave and any leave, protected leave even, which again, I think is at least, you know, somewhat more universal. But what do you see as where the system fails, you know, new families, but especially moms, when it comes to time after you have your baby, where the expectation is of returning to work? And then, you know, again, a whole other, could be a whole other conversation what that return to work looks like. But, you know, let's talk about paid leave and where, what we're missing here.
Something that's totally missing the mark. I was a teacher when I had my kids, so my experience is a little different, because teachers don't get disability insurance. And so I had my own separate situation, or, you know, my own private disability insurance, but I'm not super familiar with how that works personally about taking paid leave. But I know that there are a lot of people going back at, like, as early as 6 weeks after having their baby, and that is insane. And I personally wanted to go back to work after having my first. I love working. Like you said, I think I'm a better mom as not a stay-at-home mom. but I do think it should be a choice. And I think some moms are going to choose to work and some moms are going to choose to stay home, and that's awesome. Do what works best for you. I don't think you should be forced to go back to work at 6 weeks or 12 weeks, or I mean, I think it should be, like, in an ideal world, a year, but
and there's countries, there are European countries that totally that is normalized. For sure. And in America, we're like, What? There, I mean, it's this a crazy foreign concept.
And it impacts a lot. It's not just money. It's not, I mean, my husband and I both had stable jobs though, and we were like on the 50% pay for 12 weeks, family leave, and it's hard. Like, it's not, but it's not just about the money. It's also like, okay, I'm neither here nor there on sleep training, but I'm like, I didn't know what to do to get my kid to sleep, and I needed to go back to work. And like, I can't be up at 2 in the morning. Ideally, I wouldn't have tried. I mean, I hated sleep training because it was really hard. Like, the rage came out, and like, it was just really hard on me. But I didn't know what else to do because I had to
You had to go to
sleep
work.
and I had to go to work, and there's no option. So it's not just impacting money, it's impacting like, how do I function? How do I sleep? How do I raise my kid in order to meet this like societal expectation of going back to work?
And
And
requirement for families. I mean,
totally.
like you said, financially, majority of families
50% isn't
don't.
enough.
No, absolutely. And even if you get that, which there's so many, and this is the part that just infuriates me, and why, again, Fiddleleaf will be making an impact. And I'm working on, at least right now, the education of, the states that I've heard about that, it's your job's protected, thankfully. You're not going to get fired for having a baby and recovering. You legally cannot, but unpaid leave entirely. And in a lot of, there's a lot of states that is a thing, and it is,
Totally.
but let's give them $5,000 and have a
Exactly.
baby.
That's, I
And
think
it is.
that's not to generalize, but for the sake of our conversation, I'll generalize that, like, I'm assuming the people who are like, okay, yeah, $5,000, great, I'll have another kid, might be struggling more financially because that just makes sense. And then they're the ones who have to go back at 6 weeks. And so it's just the
Where's that
system
$5,000? Is that, yeah, how long is that going to last?
continuously failing them because now maybe they took the $5,000, but that's gone by the time you're going back to work. And so it's just like, it's just not fair. It's just not. And I think that working moms are great. Stay-at-home moms are great, like, do whatever you want. But I think that to a certain extent, it needs to be you choosing what you want, not being forced into work because either to provide for your family or now provide for another kid that you were incentivized to have that now you can't afford. So it's just
And the system is set
such a
up
flawed
to,
system.
yeah, it is. It's just like you said, the system is failing families and moms. And again, the $5,000, at this point, I will say is a joke with, how large this conversation is. And, from my experience going, and just like you said, I wanted to go back to work. I was ready. I think with my first, I went back to work a little earlier than I even needed to. But I don't know if you can relate to this, but I remember I actually was up for, interviewing promotion when I went back with my first. And literally the week I went back was when this was happening. And when I tell you, when I went out on leave, I would have thought, I absolutely deserve this. I'm qualified for this. When I went back after being out for, about 12 weeks to try to convince someone that I was the best fit for this, I did end up getting the promotion. But oh my, when I tell you, I doubted everything. I had the experience, I had, but I couldn't even, I remember struggling to put sentences together that made sense. So in but I was one of those people that had this, like I talked about, I waited to have kids because I wanted to focus on my career. I've been so career driven, but I went back and it took, and I got back into it. But it took time, and that, and I was navigating completely by myself, trying to figure out how do I go back to being this badass career woman that I want to be and that I have been. And it felt so unnatural at first to get back to that.
And in
And
most situations, this is also generalizing, but men above you who are, interviewing you
absolutely,
or making these
absolutely.
decisions,
That
and
maybe can't relate to what
they
you're
can't
going
relate.
through. Yeah,
So
absolutely.
it's just, especially in
It's
teaching, it was like, 95% or something of teachers are women and the people above them making the decisions are men. And it's like, you don't understand what this is like.
Absolutely.
Or at least not on the same level. They might.
Yeah. Have kids, and there are men that are, you know,
totally
have that empathy and can understand to a certain extent, but obviously cannot experience that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where, for me, and this is again, one of the things in my leadership roles, I've tried to empower women to go after and to have, you know, that seat at the table. And I think I've talked to you about, I'm a big fan of Sheryl Sandberg and the work she does with Lean In. If, you know, if anyone's familiar with that book of what we, all these things we just talked about creates this gender gap in leadership and in businesses, in roles of decision making. And just like you brought up in school systems, it's the same in corporate. And women have kids, go through everything we just talked about this whole time, then take any sort of absence physically, mentally, everything we talked about, and then go back without the support from the system and without support of their community and in their workplace. And how do they get to leadership? And this is what, like, I am so passionate about, is we need women in leadership. And if anyone disagrees with me, we need to talk, because women, all of the things that we've talked about of what women can do physically and mentally to go through this and be moms and be these incredible friends and daughters and everything that women are after trauma, you know, physically and emotionally and mentally, in the experience and the empathy that women have, women need to be in leadership roles. Women need to be in government positions of power to change the system that is failing women. And when they take these gaps in their careers, either for 3 months, for 6 months, some for a year, some for a few years, and then try to go back into the workforce, they're at a disadvantage. And this is the problem. What's happening everywhere is women are behind from a gender gap perspective, from a pay perspective, because they have babies. They are going through everything we talked about and go back to work or don't go back to work. Maybe 5 years later, after their kids get to school, because childcare is so expensive, go back to work at a disadvantage because they've been out of the workforce for 5 years, start maybe entry level, and then they're working for, you know, what sort of paycheck for, you know, again, the cost of kids. So this is something that I'm so passionate about, and I am going to continue to be vocal about and do everything I can to advocate and represent as a business owner. But again, there's some really cool organizations I'm going to make sure to link in with this information that are talking about this. And, you know, I want to talk a little bit about the invisible labor and the, you know, mental workload that we talk about with moms. But anything to add on the gap when it comes to returning to work, and we can definitely wrap that, because I do think it's clearly I could continue with my passion about it. But anything else do you want to add on that before we talk a little bit about the invisible labor and kind of start to wrap up?
I don't think in particular. I think obviously we could go on and on about it, but
we might need section two for that.
Yes.
Let's talk about the invisible labor, and then I want to finish up like what real support looks like, you know, just overall, like what community, what employers can do to help with this. But, you know, the invisible labor, again, this is its own conversation, but let's, you know, at least touch on it, is this, you know, and I know you know what I'm talking about. I've seen you post about it, but like, and what I, you know, I try to talk to, you know, my husband of like, what's on my brain at any given moment is like, how many diapers do we have? What size are both of the kids in? What are they going to need next week? What do they need? What's just every single thing is a step ahead. What do we need right now? What's coming? It never turns off. What doctor's appointments do they need? Are we behind on our vaccines? Have we done play dates? Have we worked on this specific skill set with our toddler that's going to start preschool in the fall? It's constant. And that was just like what I could think about the second of examples. Let alone laundry, the house, you know, anything else. The invisible labor, what's your experience with that? And what do you think, you know, how do we even begin to like feel like moms have support in this?
Yeah. I don't even know where to start. my husband takes on so much of the household chores, everything, probably more than I do, which I don't know that everyone can say that. And I still feel this mental load, invisible labor, constantly. And so it's nothing like, I think oftentimes people want to blame other people around them for not supporting. And it's like, I don't know how to solve it because I go through the same thing and I feel like I have all the support in my own household, you know?
Yeah.
So, but I do think that one thing that's helped me a lot is just literally forgetting about, like, I wish he knew, you know, all these things that need to get done, and just asking for it. Like, there are things that my husband can do so much easier than I can. And like, mentally, it's not affecting him the way it's affecting me.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, doctor isn't one of them for us, but like, if it's stressful for you to call and make a doctor's appointment, just ask for it. Say, please call the doctor and make, like, it doesn't have to be like, oh, I wish he knew, he should have called the doctor. Yes, ideally, of course, we all wish people could read our minds, but like, we just have to ask for what we need and communicate clearly. And I don't know that that will make it go away, but it can help to kind of delegate tasks and help other people help you.
Help me help you. No, and I can relate. You know, my husband is does pretty much all of the cooking, so much of the care for our kids. And just like you said, I think that's, you know, some of the challenges I have is just like you said, even if there's a really healthy share of that load, it's still, I can't turn it off. And I think, you know, sometimes partners are able to, and it just doesn't constantly weigh on them like it does the mom. And maybe that's that natural maternal instinct they talk about, is like, it will take over your brain constantly and you can't turn it off. But I completely agree with you. And something I'm constantly working at is just talking and not being afraid to vocalize, like, hey, this is, you know, or even just like check-ins. And I've heard, you know, advice from, you know, either things I've seen or read of like doing and it might even be Mel Robbins, who I'm a big fan of, but, you know, give like a percentage each day or each week, a check-in with your partner or your spouse, you know, if you're in a situation that you have, you know, help in this, is like, what percentage are you, like, 1 to 100, what percent are you at this week? And it's like, if you're, maybe your spouse is at 75, I'm at 45. It's like, okay, we know, you know, you got more capacity than I do, you know, this week, and to just come and not be afraid to vocalize that. And I don't know about you, and it sounds like maybe you can really, I go with the passive aggressive route sometimes. Never goes well. I think I even did it either this morning or yesterday. It's like my default. And it's like, because all of this, maybe stress or all these other things that's weighing on me, I don't ask for help, as we've talked about. And then I do this terrible passive aggressive thing that then usually leads to, you know, an argument not asking, not even being clear of what I'm actually wanting. So I love that you said just ask, just talk about it. And sometimes for me, I literally just need to get it off my chest. Like, I'm not even asking you to do anything. I just want to talk about what I'm going through and experiencing right now, because it feels like a lot. It feels heavy. And sometimes for me, saying it either to my partner or to my friends of like, ugh, like, I need this. I need to, you know, I need to just get this out. Sometimes even that helps. So I love what you said about just talking.
Yeah. I like that percentage thing, because I know, I mean, I still feel this some days, but definitely freshly postpartum, it was like, even though once we were beyond the like physical heal, it still felt like my husband could function from, like, I mean, I'm sure he was tired, but like 80%. And I, even at my best in that moment, was at, you know, 40 or whatever.
Yeah, your cap at that during that time.
And I just, like, I wasn't, there were so many more things going on because I had to heal and mentally and physically and everything, that I just wasn't functioning from the same level. And that is definitely where arguments could come up, or where, you know, disconnect and feeling not supported can come up, because your partner might not understand that or know that. And you might not even know that about yourself. So really just like bringing that to the forefront and talking about it is so important, just so that there can be some level of understanding and empathy.
Yeah. And if you don't have that partner, you know, hopefully you have a friend or family that you're able to, you know, try to put like a number, you know, something to help people understand. And I think that's just, I love that you said so much people could read our minds, how they can't. And I like remind myself of that every day, that, and that's good. You know, it forces us to communicate, but, you know, just finding creative ways to ask for help. If asking for help isn't something that feels natural to you. Let's wrap this up with what real support looks like. And I want to keep this, you know, as targeted to, you know, specific things. And we've already talked all sorts of different ideas throughout this. But, you know, what do you think individuals, you know, partners and friends and family overall, you know, just maybe like, and, you know, you don't have to keep it to three things. So I'm trying to think, you know, what are like some takeaways for people around a new mom, a pregnant woman? What are some, like, what do you think the top things either that you've mentioned before or that you haven't said? I know I'm putting you on the spot here. What do you think they can do to provide support for women?
I think that practical help goes a long way. And I think thinking about the daily tasks that someone like a new mom or anyone would be doing and helping to take that off their plate is, it might not seem like a big thing in the moment, but it really is helpful. So for instance, like, I think we all think about dropping off a meal, but maybe like think about breakfast, like drop them off breakfast, drop them off something they can eat for lunch for the week, drop them off, like, someone even the other day brought me yogurt and granola she made. And I was like, that's, don't even make the granola if you don't want. Like, if someone dropped off a container of yogurt and a yummy thing of granola, like with a new baby, that would make my day. And just things like that, a coffee, you know, something for breakfast for the
flowers,
week, anything.
Like, food.
Yeah. Something that's just like, maybe not what other people are thinking about, because everyone thinks, let me bring you dinner, let me give you a DoorDash gift card, which those are all amazing things. But when someone puts the extra effort into thinking about something different, it's really, it feels special as a new mom. Also, like, as a second time mom, someone with other kids, like, prep snacks for their kids, cut up all the blueberry strawberries, you know, like the grapes. Oh my gosh, the grapes. Over quartered grapes, and that mom's gonna be so happy. Just things that are maybe not, they don't seem like a big deal, but that's one more thing or one less thing that that mom has to do. And it's just, it is kind of a breath of fresh air for them. I think, yeah, practical help, or just if they want someone to sit and chat with, sit and chat, but see what the mom really needs and how can we kind of, I hear this a lot, like mother the mother instead of just thinking about the baby and the care that they need. So.
Absolutely. I absolutely love that. And it's show up for the mom in whatever way it makes sense for that mom, and in listen and ask questions about them and baby. Clearly, as a mom, this whole conversation about moms, children are amazing, babies are amazing, but this just incredible person that brought that, grew that life, carried that life, and put that life, ask about mom, care about mom.
Yeah.
And this has been incredible. Hillary, thank you so, so much for your time and your knowledge and sharing your experience. I know that this is so important to you, and it's so important to me. And I definitely want to do this again, because I think we're just scratching the surface, but I hope for anyone listening that has gone through this or is going through this, that, you know, you are never alone. There are resources, there are people that care, and you don't have to live in what feels like a lonely, sad place. There are resources, out there, and we'll make sure to link some here. Please make sure to follow Hillary Momentum Birth Coaching, because she just provides so much knowledge in perspective that is so valuable for, again, both, you know, prenatal, postpartum, but also for anyone around any moms, which I think is every single person, and how to support them. So like you said, it's Maternal Health Awareness Month. It's also Mental Health Awareness Month. These conversations are so important. And again, thank you for being a part of this.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This is awesome.
Absolutely. Thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in, and we'll chat with you next time.